When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music. Charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
More football speak in the darts world. Some very useful for my sins jargon. Rio Ferdinand on locksmiths. A never before used word for footballers being the same age. Can you put a penalty back where it came from? The most UOK hun halftime tweet from a club ever. Injury update parenting. Can a ball be fired home if it needs goal line technology to verify it? Retro football shirts from 5 years ago. Brought to your ears by Goal Hanger Podcasts. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me on the adjudication panel, they're clinging on emotionally and physically, it's Charlie Eccleshare, hello.
Hello.
And David Walker, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, a quick thanks again for all three of us, really, for everyone who came to our 7-date Football Clichés live tour of 2024. It was brilliant from start to finish, Charlie. I enjoyed every second of it. I can't wait to do it again, but not soon.
Yeah, I've got that combo of being like gutted it's over and quite relieved because, yeah, I don't know how many more we had in us. But it was, yeah, it really was amazing.
Dave, we dovetailed so well, I thought. I'm pleased with our chemistry on and off the stage.
Absolutely. Spent a lot of time together this last, 14 days? And a pleasure it was. All the highs and the lows.
Eye-opening pleasure.
Yeah, but no, it was amazing. And obviously, I think it's a massive thanks to everyone who came. Everyone who came across all the 7 shows. You know, we met a lot of people in the pubs afterwards, which was great. Obviously, there's lots of people who we didn't get to see and stuff. So huge thanks to everyone who came. It was great fun.
Salman, Chris, Salman, Phil, thanks for all your hard work behind the scenes to make sure nothing went awry audio-wise as well. Yeah, we'll be back, I hope, on the road. Either maybe later this year or next year, we'll do this all over again in some form because we really enjoyed it. And by the way, Football Clichés merchandise, if you didn't spot it at the show or didn't pick up one at the show, they'll be on sale online in due course. Lovely t-shirts, black ones, white ones, and some mugs as well, destined for the back of your office cupboard in the next few years. People wondering what it is. And yeah, lovely merchandise, top quality stuff as well. Delighted to have it. Right. It's adjudication panel time. Let's get back to our bread and butter, shall we? Our egg and milk. First up, this came from Joe Gallagher. This is from the TikTok account of the Australian Reptile Park, showcasing new arrival, Wilbur the Wombat.
And he's always getting into trouble. Wombats have a lot of energy and it's fast-paced energy. And he may be cute, but he gets into my shoes, under my feet, under the bed. It's just like having a toddler at home running an absolute muck.
I will never, ever tire of running an absolute muck. Charlie, John Hartson famously coined it, and I think people have just lost their heads with it. It's superb.
Yeah, I mean, Hartson, I think, was running an absolute mock, which I do prefer.
Closer to the original.
Yeah, because I think this one suggests you've sort of misheard it. Running an absolute mock is even better, but this is still great.
How has this happened? Has this phrase become a thing? Is it an Australian thing? Surely this person is not aware of the work of John Hartson, surely.
No, I don't think those two things are linked.
No,
Why would anyone else say it, though? It was such an obvious sort of like mangled phrase from Hartson of an established kind of thing.
I think quite a few people probably think it is running amok and as if you're sort of creating amok around the place. So if you think that, then I guess it's possible you'd then make the leap to absolute.
Two mini theories from me. One, getting the word absolute into anything is always quite cathartic and satisfying to do. It really rams the point home. And sometimes syllabically, your brain just manages to insert it no matter what you think the word is that you're saying. So wombats aren't reptiles. So God knows what Wilbur's doing there anyway. He won't slot in seamlessly at all. Right. Hot on the heels of Jude Bellingham Who the other day, which really annoyed all three of us, didn't it? Jude Bellingham Who was a Facebook headline from Lad Bible about the story of the Met Office issuing a warning over a once in a 250-year weather event set to happen in the UK. Charlie, their Facebook headline for this was Beast from the East Who? That's really annoying.
So good. I mean, I put my theory to you about some of these, and I really hope it's not true, and maybe someone from Football on TNT, because that was where the Jude Bellingham Who one came from, wasn't it? Was that it's an SEO thing, and that people are instructed have the full name in there for search purposes, and that's part of why you get things like Jude Bellingham Who rather than Jude Who. I hope that's not the case, but I just wonder if that's part of it.
That's a generous read. Dave, I just think some people's brains have a glitch with this sort of stuff. But then with Beast from the East Who, would you go from Who from the East? It's not going to work.
What from the East?
Beast from the Who?
Beast from the what?
Beast Who? Yeah. Is the Beast from the East well known enough to get away with this?
That's a good point.
Beast from where exactly?
When was it? 2018 or so? 2019?
Yeah, I thought it was a recurring thing like El Nino. I didn't know it was a one and done, the Beast from the East.
Right, okay.
I think it is recurring, yeah.
Yeah, very much a recurring thing. Right, we're sticking to non-football matters. This is darts starlet Luke Littler on Sky Sports News responding to Belgian Open semi-final opponent Ricardo Pietrzczko, calling him arrogant.
When people behave like he did, do you feel you've got a target or a dartboard on your back?
I think ever since I've burst onto the scene, I know that every player wants to beat me. And even my family and my manager have said, you've always got to be at your A game, because anyone who plays me now, it's a cup final to them.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Weren't expecting that one, were you? I mean, it should be a universal concept. No reason why it shouldn't transcend sports. Darts don't have cup finals as such, but it still works.
Actually, maybe even more so than football. I mean, they have the Premier League, obviously, so that's a league thing. But a lot of darts are cups, are tournaments. So they might, you feel even more like a cup final. I also liked his burst onto the scene as well.
Yeah, there's loads going on.
Drop that one in there. And also the interviewer saying, do you feel like you've got a dartboard on your back? it's a bit on the nose. It doesn't quite work as well when you are actually a dartsman.
Barely even raised a smile from the ice cold Luke Littler there, a dartboard on his back. But yeah, lots to enjoy in that one, but I really enjoyed it. Now, for my sins corner, not much to play with here, but a fascinating message from Walton Yeah. And you know how For My Sins Corner is often undermined for when we have like a front-loaded For My Sins. So, For My Sins, I'm a Brentford fan or something like that. Anyway, we can't use those. And it's quite annoying and they're quite common. But I never really know how to describe those. Walton Yeah's got in touch with this. He says, new lad at work dropped a no backlift For My Sins when he was introduced as a Bradford City supporter this morning. Was truly breathtaking. I love no backlift For My Sins.
That's amazing.
What a tremendous way of describing it. That's it. That's the official term from now on.
Yeah, that's really good. Could you go like top heavy or something? But yeah, no backlift is superb.
Yeah, it's really annoying, Dave, I would say it's something like 60 to 70% of the For My Sins I get sent from sort of Radio 4 interviews or whatever are no backlift ones. And it's really annoying because it ruins the concept.
Yeah. It's not as impactful, is it, when you say it, just using the phrase. You got to do it right.
Mm. Now, I don't want to talk about the original comment here. I want to talk about the ensuing conversation that it created on Twitter. This is astonishing. During the TNT Sports coverage of Arsenal versus Porto on Tuesday night, Rio Ferdinand said of Odegaard's assist, "You can't give a locksmith like that the keys." Josh Butler tweeted, "Charlie, what? The whole point of a locksmith is they don't require the fucking keys." And so people got a bit literally Dave underneath it. James said, "It's making me feel dumb, but surely that makes sense. Giving a locksmith the key is making his life even easier than it normally is." This does feel like something that Dave would say.
Yeah. Nice to see my influences paying off, eh?
Maybe.
I did enjoy that discourse, yeah. You do go in various different directions with that. I'm trying to think, I mean, how would that be said in a more kind of sensical way? I mean, I guess it's sort of like, you know, for a master car thief, don't leave your car unlocked. You're making it incredibly easy for them.
It's the same thing, though. It's the same argument. If you leave your car unlocked, any old bloke can get in. You don't need to be a master car thief if the door's open.
But yeah, don't leave your door exposed to a locksmith. Don't let them get near your door. I don't know. Josh Butler replied to James, though, Dave, and says, "The way I see it, anyone can open a door with keys, so giving them to the locksmith, the person whose skill lies in unlocking the door without the keys, just undermines the ability of the locksmith," which is absolutely right.
Exactly.
Irish Eagle waded in, Charlie, and says, "Maybe because a locksmith can open doors without keys, so if you give the locksmith the keys, then it makes his job a hell of a lot easier." I think we're just repeating the point here. But then Joe came in and says, "But anyone can open a door with keys. Makes no difference if you give them to a locksmith, does it?" this is a glorious development of he's 28 until he's 29 for me. This is wonderful.
Yeah, I can see getting bogged down in this. I think this is going to run and run.
This is the sort of discourse you used to have on Twitter. This app is free, etc.
All we need, really, is for whoever was next to Rio Ferdinand on punditry duties last night to actually go there with this. That's the next step. Someone's got to take these things on.
Absolutely. More stuff along the lines of Keane pulling up Micah Richards and saying, you know, a defender can't burst onto the scene. That's what punditry should be for me, policing each other's use of the English language. Now, speaking of which, the Daily Mail tweeted a story about Pepe of Porto at the age of 41, showing no sign of his advancing years. And the tweet read as follows, Charlie: "Porto captain Pepe, 41, age mate of Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta, showed no sign of his advancing years. His warrior status is very much still intact." Age mate. I've never heard that before in my entire life. Is it like namesake, but for ages?
It's amazing. I mean, I saw that. Absolutely pissed myself. Age mate. I mean... Yeah, clearly it's, like you say, a classmate or something like that.
Or countryman, compatriot. Yeah. I guess we do need one for age.
There are, well, contemporary. I guess it doesn't say exactly the same thing because contemporary
enough,
might not
it?
Be...
Yeah, just alive at the same time.
The age mate. But yeah, it's from like classmate, flatmate. You can see where they're going, but it's... I've never, ever heard that before.
Porto captain Pepe, Mikel Arteta's fellow 41-man.
41-man. Dave, do you reckon you could drop age mate to your conversations from now on?
Well, I might try. As you say,
his near age mate.
It's fulfilling a role here. It is.
Yeah, saving words.
It's functional, yeah.
Never seen it before. Now, here's reigniting an old debate of ours, Charlie. You may remember we were talking about a while ago a penalty shootout. A co-commentator described a penalty as being whipped into the near post at a penalty. And we thought, arguably could be possible to be described as such if you're whipping it across your body. If you're whipping it across your body, it's probably further away. The other way, it's maybe nearer. So you could make a reasonably logical argument for near and far post at a penalty. This taken one step further, Ali McCoist, during the penalty shootout at the Emirates, described Kai Havertz's penalty as putting it back where it came from. What, did he back heel it?
Yeah. Or those old MLS penalty style shootouts where they dribbled all the way through or something. I can't even really see. Does it look like a finish?
I haven't seen Havertz's penalty. What did he do?
He goes across. He does like a stuttering run up and goes across his... He whips it kind of across his body to the keeper's left-hand side, him being left-footed.
So
I guess, yeah, if it was a pullback from the right, you would be hitting it back whence it's come from. But it's...
Come on, lads.
Yeah, it's a bit
Come
odd.
On. The ball is stationary.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously it makes no sense. I'm just trying to think what he was body was even thinking it.
No, I can see it, Dave, because if you hit a ball across your body from the penalty, you hit the ball, you're curling it, so the ball goes away from you, then back in again. So it's coming back where it came from in a horizontal sense, if you see what I mean. It curves slightly, then meets the point where it was sitting on the penalty spot, and then carries on. So it is coming back where it, from whence it came. Just using the power of it.
I'm not sure.
Oh, God.
I'm not sure. A rare misstep from Ali McCoist for me.
Oh, fine. Okay. But if you don't agree with it, it's Coisty. Yeah. He was a great striker. It feels like there's innate knowledge there and it somehow makes sense. So I'm trusting his knowledge of technique more than anything
I suppose,
else.
I guess, right, yeah, I guess if he's kind of thinking that if a ball had been crossed to him or pulled back to him, if he put it in that corner, that's putting it back where it came from, as opposed to opening your body up and putting it into the other corner.
Yeah.
So he's kind of describing the feeling of what it would be like to hit a ball like that.
Now, next, Charlie, there's a strand of earnest manager speak. Now, all manager speak is earnest these days, but there's a very particular subset of earnest manager speak that is exclusive to a certain small club of managers, such as the Brendan Rodgers of this world, where they talk in a very peculiar way about things. And we can now add Nathan Jones to that club, if he wasn't in there already. This came from Scott Mitchell-Malm. This is Nathan Jones talking about the new Charlton signing, Connor Wickham. Connor's been here for a couple of weeks, and we like the human being. So that's the start. We like the human being. What a weird way they talk about stuff.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because this is increasingly common. You do hear this quite often about, more importantly, he's the right fit for us culturally, or, you know, he's got the right personality. Right human being. Yeah, that is a very intense, slightly odd way of describing it.
But it's also quite impersonal.
Yeah,
in a way.
It's the grammar of it that I find odd.
Yeah,
Dave.
Because normally I think you might more commonly hear someone say, look, first and foremost, we like him as a human being, which is a bit more specific. Whereas we like the human being.
Yeah, it's impersonal.
Getting a really good human being through the door and into the building and out on the grass. It's another language, isn't it, really? It really is. This is amazing, actually. It's came from recent Clichés guest Ali Maxwell of the Not the Top 20 pod. And he alerted our attention to Shrewsbury Town's halftime tweet. 3-0 down they were at home to Exeter City. And now, Charlie, at this stage, you'd expect a fairly kind of deadpan, downbeat
behind
attitude.
At the break.
Yeah, behind at the break. Work to do, maybe. Admittedly, not a 3-0, but that sort of thing. This is perhaps the most "you okay, hun" mid-game tweet from a club ever. They tweeted at 3-0 down, sometimes there's only so much you can do. This is so Facebook status update from someone who's just been dumped or cheated on, isn't it?
It's so petty. I really, really respect it.
You all right, Shrewsbury? What's he done now?
Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. If people are going to treat you that way. You know what? I'm done. I'm done with football. Done with referees.
Dave, I believe the inspiration for this was a sixth-minute red card and what looked like a very straightforward red card as well. But I guess the injustice bar is quite high for a social media team, or low, rather.
Does this sort of stray into the territory of where they could they get done for this? Could they get hauled in front of the Football League authorities for this?
Honestly, I think it would fall just about under the umbrella of lamenting and bemoaning rather than directly criticising. I think it's too veiled.
Yeah.
For the FA. It'd be great if the FA did take any sort of action over this. Can you imagine the written reasons if they got done for this?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, the FA sort of citing previous uses of this phrase. I would love to see it.
It would be a landmark case. I mean, it really would open the floodgates.
Yeah, sort of. Is there an FA legislation, Charlie, for sort of Twitter snidiness from clubs rather than outright, I don't know, disrespecting or bringing the game into disrepute?
Sag, yeah, being... of getting you into trouble.
Just tremendous tweet. Just really kind of 20-something angst from Shrewsbury Town. Anyway, half-time for them, and it's half-time for us. See you shortly. Right, welcome back to Football Clichés. This is part two of the adjudication panel. Charlie, this is awesome. It comes from D. Fitzgerald's, and part of me thinks it's not true and it's embellished, but I hope it is. He says, my six-year-old daughter was going to a party on Saturday and was messing about on the stairs. I actually said out loud, Be careful, otherwise you'll hurt yourself, miss the party, and be a major doubt for your own party in 6 weeks' time. I desperately want this to be true, and whether it was ironic or not, I don't care. Saying that out loud is wonderful news for society, frankly.
Come on, come back down here. Let me wrap you up in cotton wool.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That lucky child getting imbued with the language of football so early.
Taking her home early from the party, Dave, to keep her fresh for the party in a few weeks' time.
Rested from that first party.
I don't want to come off, but that's what you want to see. You don't want her to be happy to leave the party early.
I'm going to sit you down for this one.
Birthday parties come thick and fast at that age when you've got that many friends.
They really do.
Dee Fitzgerald's great parenting. Yeah, definitely the way to go. Next came from Ed Pullen. Interesting question this, Charlie. Why is it a one-on-one when it's goalkeeper versus one striker, but a two-on-two when it's two strikers versus two defenders and a goalkeeper? That's just a good question. Why does the goalkeeper suddenly become irrelevant? Is it because they're not really the main protagonist of the passage of play anymore?
Yeah, I guess so.
They're not involved yet.
No.
So you don't count them.
But I haven't got to the goalkeeper yet.
Right. I mean, that's fairly straightforward, isn't it?
Two attackers versus two defenders. If the attacker breaks past the two defenders, then it's a one-on-one. It's not like the goalkeeper's not going to be in a three against the two defenders.
Wow, these days,
usually distance as well. You describe a two-on-two in like a counter-attack, maybe when they're just entering into the half. Or it's a two-on-two. I mean, now we've got two-on-two here or whatever. And the goalkeeper's maybe not sometimes on TV, not even in the shot.
Yeah, I think it'd be really confusing if you were saying, like, I mean, obviously now because of the convention being what it is, but also, yeah, because when you look at it, it does look like that's the kind of combat. Obviously, there is then the added confusion that one-on-ones can also be a thing. You know, Haaland against Van Dijk the other day wouldn't have been described as a one-on-two. That was a one-on-one, which Haaland could have beaten Van Dijk and then had another one-on-one. It could have been a series of one-on-ones, essentially.
I think you're absolutely right. Ed Pullen, consider yourself explained to.
On that moment, how good was it when Haaland and Van Dijk were in that situation? It felt so rare to see Van Dijk so deep and Haaland to break through. It was a proper like, oh God, wow, what's going to happen here moment. A real clash of the titans.
It was like it had been orchestrated.
Yeah.
Like, let's get these two. It was the sort of thing you talk about, like, oh, what would happen if you pitted the best striker in the league against the best defender?
Yeah. A rare situation, Charlie, because, you know, football is so tactically complex now, I guess, that you don't often get it boiled down to those one-on-one genuine real-time battles. And you couldn't have picked two better players for that moment, right?
Yeah, and both came out of it with credit in a way. Like,
Neville called it draw. Got like a score draw, I think he was. Mm. Which is a great way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of what? It was like, you know, both men took some blows, but both came off relatively unscathed, but both looked good in what they, you know, both showed why they are so good in their different ways.
Van Dijk employing the tried and tested Sunday league method, Dave, of defending a one-on-one, which is standing off and off and off until the striker decides to finally do something and then fucks it up, which is the only way to defend one-on-ones in Sunday league. You give them enough rope and they'll fuck it up because they're a Sunday league striker. And fortunately, that translates to the elite level. Fantastic news. Yeah, don't commit. Stand your ground.
There's also a thing, just and maybe this is more of like a body language thing, but Joe Gomez did this, of when defenders almost try and fake how calm and cool they are about it. So in the second half, if you watch it back, when Doku's running at him, which is clearly a really dangerous situation and ends with Doku hitting the post, initially Gomez is just sort of standing up.
It's jogging,
up, like,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, yeah, I'm not worried about this.
Just and cutting off the angle rather than racing into position. Yeah.
It's a really funny gait they take up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. Great, great observation. Now, last week, Cliché's listener Charlie was watching PSG versus Real Sociedad. He heard Darren Fletcher say that PSG were 1-0 up in Sociedad. There's literally no such place. Now, this is obviously a historical thing that people have got confused by, Dave. In the moment, I'm kind of happy to let him off. But in my eyes, is Real Sociedad the number one football club that sounds like it should be a place? And let's face it, kind of should be a place. Sociedad should be a city. I know it isn't, but it absolutely should be. It sounds like the name of a city, and I'm happy to use it as such from now on.
I think it's because of the Real, because we're used to having, we're used to, you know, Madrid or whatever, and Oviedo, like used to that being the non-geographical part of the name. Even if you think about it for half a second, it's obviously what it's society or whatever, isn't it? Like, you get a lot. It's, don't call them Sociedad, it's La Real. You see that all the time. But yeah, it's an understandable thing at first glance, isn't it, when you first see them when you're a kid or whatever.
I'm scanning down the UEFA club coefficient list at the moment, Charlie, trying to find the highest ranked team who could also qualify for this, and I've got to Atalanta. Now, if Atalanta is some sort of weird little region of Bergamo, a little tiny kind of neighbourhood, then, like, I don't know, like Sampdoria, I think, is a part of Genoa, for example. But I don't think Atalanta is, because Atalanta is like a mythical figure, isn't it? I'm pretty sure. So Atalanta could be, but Atalanta could easily be like a little city. Oh yeah, got a tough trip to I'm flying over to Atalanta actually on Tuesday. It's gonna be fun. Really looking forward to it. I haven't been there before.
I mean, what about, I have just been in Seville recently, but Real Betis.
Betis sounds like a city, but I'm also, surely that's a place, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it is, because it absolutely sounds in the spirit as well of Real Sociedad, and it sounds, you know, like, because we're used to Real Madrid, you kind of assume.
Well, it's grey area. The name Betis is derived from Betis, Roman name for the Guadalquivir River, which passes through Seville. So sort of, but not.
Okay, yeah.
So it's the river, but that doesn't count, does it?
Yeah,
it's
sort of borderline. But yeah, if you said like here, you know, what a game here in Betis, that wouldn't be right.
No.
Like, that wouldn't be that far off here in Sociedad or whatever.
Olympiacos? That's not a place, is it?
No. Piraeus. No.
There you go. But yeah, Sociedad remains number one in that regard. So, Darren Fletcher, you're excused. Slam Dance Cosmo gets in touch next, Dave, and says, Ipswich Town versus West Brom the other day. An Ipswich Town fan behind me, unhappy that the ref asked an away team player to help him adjust his mic when it broke. The fan said a home player should have been asked, and because it implies that he favours the other team. That is ref paranoia to an insane level I've never heard before.
Absolutely mad. Obviously, it doesn't matter. It should be complete irrelevance. But by his own logic, no player should be helping the ref.
Maybe the logic here, Charlie, is that that's the home team's privilege, that they get to fix stuff on their turf. And I don't know.
Yeah, that does feel quite extreme. I mean, I remember once getting annoyed in a school game that the ref was like calling people by their first names for the opposition. And again, I don't know really how much of a difference that makes, but it did annoy me a bit. And I feel like that's quite...
He was from that school.
Yeah, he was from that school.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah. This is obviously this is quite far removed from that. But there are little things refs do that you are a bit like, is that fair?
Actually, you know, Charlie, that does sound tin pot, but I bet it does. That has potential to happen in, say, like an FA Cup tie between a Premier League team and, say, a League One team. If that's a Premier League referee that's been given the job, they're more likely to be familiar with those players and call them, I don't know, Raheem or something
like
that.
You can just imagine it.
Then turn around, oi, number eight, turn around. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I reckon managers have complained about this before, like favouring the Premier League
side. I'm sure that would really piss people off, yeah.
Right, love this. Here's some micro refereeing body language for you, Dave. Will Richard says, I was at Portsmouth versus Burton Albion the other night, and the Burton keeper was booked for time wasting from goal kicks in the first half. The ref pointed three or four times at different parts of the 6-yard box to indicate each infringement before brandishing the yellow. Perfection. Micro totting up process. This is superb.
Love to see it.
How accurate do you reckon it would have been, Charlie?
I can imagine it being pretty
accurate. You've only got two things to point at, really, left and right.
Yeah, depending on the ref.
Maybe the ref's got a little pitch on his cards, and he's putting a little X next to every infringement. Yeah.
Or he's just got a picture in his head. The best refs, they've got a picture.
Probably not that hard to remember, actually, three or four wasted goal kicks. I don't know. But yeah, lovely touch. Great refereeing. He's headed for the top, that official. Ed McCosh tweeted this the other day, Charlie. It's from a match report of Bournemouth versus Sheffield United the other day. And it went as follows. Neto punched the corner against Solanke's back, sending the ball into the path of Robinson at the far post. And the Blades captain fired home, with the goal decision system showing it across the line before the Bournemouth goalkeeper clawed it away. Ed McCosh says, not to go all football cliches adjudication panel here, it's fine, but I'm simply not accepting that any shot had to be verified through goal line technology can be said to have been fired home. I completely agree with this. Agree.
Have we talked about I'm sure we have, but at what point it's home? I mean, is it when it hits the back of the net? Is home just... I mean, home doesn't feel very just crossing the line.
No, absolutely right. I mean, Dave, we could apply some sort of, you know, clinical threshold here for what constitutes home. But it's more of a spiritual thing, the word home. Home is a great word in football. Fired home, tucked home, as if where that's the ball belongs.
Absolutely. You technically are home when you walk through the door, but you're really home once you sit down on the sofa and get comfortable.
If anything, that undermines the theory, because I think you are home. The moment you cross the threshold, that's home. I've just got home, actually. And you could be keys in, still in the door. Just got home, actually. So I'm not having that. Not having that. But Charlie, it needs to touch net to be home.
I think so. Fired home, especially because there's such an emphatic no doubt about a fired home. Whereas obviously, when you've got the goal line system involved, there isn't that same emphaticness.
You could make an exception day for bundled home, because that very rarely would touch the net. But in that case, it's more a case, oh, the ball finally got there. Thank God we got it over the line. And that's a different thing. That, you know, we made it. It's in its rightful place. But if there's any doubt that it went over the line and it has to be ruled upon by technology, that's definitely not home.
I do agree. What about if it was like quite a deep one? Because sometimes you get a defender that you see the replay and the ball is kind of really far into the goal and the defender's obviously far behind the line.
The keeper was quite far behind in this instance, but even so, it's not that of like to look at in real time. It's obviously, once you see the replay, you can see he is quite far back. But even then,
I just think net touchage,
because they keep the ball out.
Yeah, it's a genuine attempt to clear the ball off the line, I think, is what would undermine it. So yeah, unless it's genuinely in vain. Or I'll tell you what, if the defender trying to clear it clears the ball out of the goal but then carries on into the net, then by extension the ball is home. Maybe that's allowed. We'll see. We've got ourselves in knots here. Right, next up, a huge crime: increasing commercialisation of football. Coventry City have announced that their 2019-23rd shirt is now available as part of their retro range, Dave.
Wow.
Stu says, can a five-year-old shirt be considered retro? This is awful. I mean, I think it's well regarded among the fan base. It's a black and white sort of checkered situation. I think it's got cult status. But it's not retro. It cannot be retro. We can't have this.
It's the two-tone, the specials, that whole thing, isn't it, from Coventry? It's quite nice. But I noticed that it's also got the Hummel. So it's an official Hummel replica. Whereas I've been having sort of one of those existential moments lately when I've noticed that Watford, who also, as most clubs do, have a retro range. What they do is they reprint the old shirts, but without they're not like made by the manufacturer. They don't have Umbro or Mizuno or whatever on them. They just make
quite
it without
disappointing
them.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is annoying. But Watford have started, the most recent addition to that is the 2012-13 season from the Deeney season with the goal against Leicester, and that's bad enough.
Deeney and all that,
that's bad enough, and you're thinking, Christ, I vividly remember a season that's now considered retro, but 1920, 5 years, no, come on.
But well, yeah, I mean, I was thinking that as you were, before you said about the Deeney kit, but I was thinking, is what is the cutoff roughly? I mean, is a decade, for there will be some people, if you're, I don't know, 18, then a kit a decade ago, it was like, oh yeah, when I was a little kid, that was my first kit. Like that, I imagine would feel pretty retro.
10 years is probably I would say is the limit, isn't it? A decade. It's a long time. It doesn't feel like a long time ago to me, but it is.
Yeah.
Really.
15 to 20, I'm looking at, to be truly retro.
But I think if you're younger, I think if you are 18, then a kit from when you were 8 would feel another world.
You could do it as a proportion of your life then.
Yeah.
A third of your life? Yeah.
That is more than a half of your life.
Half your life is retro. So if you're old as fuck, you probably wouldn't consider 20 years ago as retro. Okay. Interesting. Old as fuck. What a lovely way of putting it. Shout out to all my age mates out there. Right. Final point to talk about today. This is a great bit of news from the unemployed managerial world. This is a hot off the press from Epping. Former Premier League football manager Alan Kirbishley is facing fresh opposition to plans for a garden room in the garden of his newly built house in Epping. A planning inspector has twice shown the proposal the red card, dismissing appeals after permission was twice refused by Epping Forest District Council. So great to see, Charlie, that Alan Kirbishley is taking tending to his garden to serious levels while he waits his next managerial role.
Yeah. Oh, he's nothing if not thorough, old Kerbs.
Well, does this finally bring an end to the long-running and
the banter?
Well beyond its sell-by date banter? Yeah, that he's finally focusing on his domestic. He's definitely not interested in a job. He's trying to build a garden room in his new house.
I think that has already gone. I think now, like, Hodgson and Allardyce are the go-tos for that kind of gag, aren't they?
If you say to me, when there's a managerial vacancy anywhere, let alone Watford, if you link Kirbishley to managerial vacancy, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, is that far enough ago to be retro? Has it even been that long?
Coming
since
back
that
round. Curves is coming back round.
I almost think that's. I would almost have more respect for that than an Allardyce or a Hodgson. You're like, oh, okay, you're going back into. Because that's probably a decade, really, since Curbs even was a gag candidate. Well, 2014 feels about right.
I can tell you that the Alan is Available Twitter account has not posted since December the 19th, 2018.
Oh,
and it was,
okay.
Hey, Mulder FK, I'm available. what a way to sign it off. Oh, God. Hashtag parody in the bio, just for absolute clarification. Anyway, the report continues, Dave. Now the town council wants to see the latest application from the former West Ham and Charlton manager also kicked into touch. Some very fine margins going on here, Dave. The two previously refused applications have had subsequent changes only to the height, which has been reduced from 3 meters to 2.7 to the currently proposed 2.5. It's like a transfer bid, but the other direction.
Yeah,
we'll get it over the line. 2.5 meters now. Now, one of the main objectors to this latest proposal, Charlie, is that Councillor Michael Wright, who sounds incredibly Keynesian, a real Keynesian figure here. This is what he had to say: "I object. End of story. After 3 years, you would have thought that Mr. Kerbishley would have learnt something, but obviously he hasn't." It's just like the blog. Obviously he hasn't. Mr. Kerbishley, like Signor Guardiola the other day.
Who would he cite as well? Being like,
my mate
Sean Bartlett was over the other week and said Kerbs wasn't actually even that good for Charlton.
My mate Steve Gritt. Pards. My mate Alan Pardew.
He said it was a mess he inherited at the Valley. And goodness knows that club deserves better.
Dave, I wish Kerbishley well with his development, do you?
Of course, yeah.
I hope he gets over the line.
I hope so.
Right, we've got this one over the line at least. Charlie Eccleshare, you were with us in spirit at least. Well done to you.
Thank you.
Well done, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Great touring, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. Can't wait to do it again. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks for everyone coming to the live shows. We love you all. It's been an absolute pleasure to be all of you. We've had so much fun. My voice is primarily fucked from talking to you rather than doing the shows and the drinking, obviously. But yeah, we go again at some point and we're cracking on with the podcast as well. Right, thanks for listening. Back on Tuesday. See you later.
Podcast Network.